Senate Rules and Administration Committee Subcommittee on Redistricting. Members, we have in front of us today a congressional plan. So maybe at the outset here, good afternoon, Senator Rust. Let me give a little bit of an outline here, and then we need to do a we need to make an amendment and get the bill and the language properly in front of us. So members, this is a congressional plan. You have a packet in your packet that includes maps and then a series of reports. Everything from a contiguity report to minority report, so an analysis of the plan. This is the plan, just to be clear, that was made public on Monday of this week, the 9th. So this is a drawing of 8 districts. Members, you'll recall that per Tom Gillespie, we were very close to losing one of these 8 districts. We nudged out Missouri, as I recall. So we retained all 8. And the exact number, which is important for us to remember, members, is 662,991. So the standard on the size of these districts, this is a higher standard than what we talked about and what we've used on the state legislative plan. These districts have to be drawn literally equal to the person. So we have 5 districts under this plan, members, that are 662,991, and 3 that are one less. So it is a very high standard as to the exact number of population that's represented in each of these 8. Let me just briefly, members, talk about the changes in population. So I guess this kind of goes south to north, but District 1, the current District 1 had to gain 18,204. That's a lot of that would include some population loss in on the western edges of the state. District 2 was one of it's actually the second biggest growing district. So District 2 had to shed or lose nearly 70,000 population. District 3, so the western suburbs, had to gain 12,000, a little over 12,000. District 4, so kind of what often people refer to as East Metro, that had to gain 48,000. District 5, with Minneapolis as the focus, that also had to gain 46,000. So you can just imagine already that metro area 4 and 5 needing to expand. District 6 was the biggest, members, and had to lose nearly 100,000 population. District 7 had to gain 37,000. District 8 had to gain 2,649. So this accounts for all those population shifts, members. Obviously, if you just look at the map, just the biggest changes will be the some districts that have been drawn from east to west, the 7th and the 8th, and then the 6th district had to shrink. The 3rd district under this plan pushes out from the western suburbs. The 2nd had to lose. We talked about that. And the 1st district, that east to west district at the southernmost part of the state, had to gain some voters, some population as well. Members, I'll also note the splits. The current county and city splits under the map that we're now under, the plan that we're now under today, is split 8 counties and 7 cities. The plan in front of you is about the same. This one does one better on counties. It splits 7 counties and 7 cities. So I understand we have some people want to testify. Maybe we'll take that first, members, and then take any questions or comment. So I know we had at least one that signed up prior and a couple that have. So the name that I have in front of me right now is Jeff Narbrook. You could join us at the table here. Am I saying that even close to right?
Narrowbrook, yep.
Narrowbrook.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having me here. I'm Jeff Narrowbrook with the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. We're a 2,000-member statewide organization of nonprofits, and we come to this work kind of from the principle of civic engagement. It's really a principle that the nonprofit sector was founded on. When you think back to the civic associations and on to today, it's a principle that we continue to foster among our members. Without taking the credit ourselves, I really think the nonprofit sector had a huge role in keeping our 8 seats. So we're here with 8 instead of 7, which is great. Nonprofits did a lot around getting so-called hard-to-count communities involved with the census process. And we've also been working with them on the redistricting process as well. So my comments today, I'm actually going to address briefly only on the process that was used. So I'm not here to comment on the map in particular, but would like to take a moment to comment on the process. The timing's a little bit off, as the map is already before us, but this has moved really quickly, and we were hoping to see more public engagement on this, and so it's a point I'd still like to make briefly here. So really feel that the Senate's maybe missed an opportunity for public engagement on this process that would be really beneficial not just to the public but to the elected officials as well. I think this is different than an ordinary policy bill. It comes once a decade. It affects all voters. It's very complex, very messy, very confusing, probably intimidating for people to understand. It's also, you know, inherently has a lot of political tension. There's a lot of things that I think would make it difficult for the public to engage in the first place. And because of all this, you know, I think it's really important to have a proactive effort to engage the public in this process. The House has done a little bit. They've did 3 public meetings across the state. I'm not aware of any meetings that the Senate has been able to schedule, so I know some of the maps before you have had some public hearings in the House. I don't believe any in the Senate. I think it's good for the public to really engage in this dialogue because they know their community. They know what kind of district they want. And having watched some of the public reaction to the House plan during their committee, I think it's really good for the elected officials to do this as well. You know, a lot of people don't understand why is my district changing or why does it have to change in the first place. And so engaging the community in that discussion, helping them understand what's different about their area, why you're making the choices you've made, how the priorities that you're setting are going to play out, I think really helps build public trust in the process as well. So I think ideally, you know, legislators will be traveling throughout the state to meet with citizens on the process, much as the same way that you hold some town hall meetings. You know, there's lots of other ways to get this feedback, whether it's just working individually. I'm sure you've had conversations with folks, but just getting more people in the process would have really helped to, I think, make sure that we're creating a map that's best for everyone. So before you vote on the map today, if that is, in fact, the plan, I just ask that you reflect on the value of public input and perhaps creating some further opportunities. I think for a lot of factors, this process is not working well for our state, at least for the past 4 decades. I don't think public input is a panacea for the kind of the structural problems we have in getting this agreed upon and not having it land in the courts, but I think it will go a long way to maybe alleviating some of the tensions around this and just bringing in more voices, which I think is really important for something that really affects all voters. So thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Narrowbrook, and thank you for, you mentioned at the front of your testimony, the work that you did to help with kind of the census forms and getting the word out about that. And sounds like that might have had an impact.
I hope so.
And so, Mr. Narrowbrook, do you have a comment on the plan itself, or are you going to keep your comments just to the process?
Right. My comments are limited to the process only.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean, we have your name down here, too, from Common Cause. Mr. Dean, welcome back to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota. We're a nonpartisan government watchdog group, and I'm here to speak briefly about the plans. if you remember, just earlier this week, talked a little bit about concerns about the process. I think that was reiterated here today by Mr. Nairbrook. I don't want to repeat those comments at all, but I really just kind of have one question sort of about the map. And the question basically is kind of, what were you thinking when you were sort of developing this map? And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but I think it would really be helpful for the public to sort of understand the thought process in terms of why the districts were created in the way that you've put them together. Without sort of any public testimony and sort of very little conversation, I think it's unclear really how the maps were really drawn when you kind of look at them right now. And I think it's important that we move sort of beyond the talking points that have existed around fairness and transparency and really have a conversation about these maps. Because I think that's really what the public is looking for right now, not the just the standard talking points. So I think it's really, really important for the committee to kind of go through the map. Mr. Chair, you talked briefly about sort of what the maps look like, but I think people really want to know why. Sort of why were certain decisions made? And this is a part of, this was a recommendation that we made to you early on in the process in the letter that we sent. We really asked for just some justification on why maps were being drawn. And you're seeing that this is becoming more and more of a common practice as districts are drawn around the country. Virginia probably is one of the best examples of this. In their recent redistricting process, their governor, who is a Republican, who also has a Republican legislature, actually created an advisory independent commission to help him draw the lines with the legislature. In that process, that group released a 60-page memo here that I have in front of me that kind of talks through their justification and how they drew the lines. And I think it was really helpful for the public there to understand those reasons. So in that particular state, they talk about, you know, keeping together their capital area district, which is around Richmond, Virginia, and why it's important to sort of keep that group together. Then they also talk about how they made changes to the changes of the map compared to the previous redistricting plan and sort of outline issues of compactness and how they actually improved the level of compactness in the map or how they retained a black voting age population in certain districts and improved upon that compared to previous years or reduced the number of split jurisdictions. Now, on the GIS website, you do have some of this information, but you don't really have the clear explanation of why. And I think that's why you're seeing some of the concerns being raised around the community and around the state about the current map, especially when the court has made clear definitions in the past regarding certain communities of interest. Particularly, I think the most criticism has come from the Northland by sort of creating the new 8th congressional district is sort of the area all across the top of the state. I want to refer you to the 2002 court ruling where they said that there are some natural divisions within the state. For example, northwestern Minnesota and the Red River Valley have interests separate from northeastern Minnesota's interests in its forests, the Iron Range, and Lake Superior. And so they clearly said in the previous court decision that they are two very distinct communities of interest, and that's why they, at the time, kept it separate. I think the question is, why did you merge them? Did you disagree with the court ruling on that? We've heard from I was actually in Duluth this morning and chatting with their editorial board up there, and I think that they made it clear that really the Red River Valley and the Iron Range have virtually nothing in common when it comes to this. I mean, you have sort of the farming to the west, and the forest and the mining to the east. Really, the geography really sort of divides those two sort of natural congressional districts. One of the facts that I found most interesting about this particular map is that these have actually been separate congressional districts for the last 100 years. So you're making a pretty significant change by the proposed map. And so the question, again, is why? And I think the concern that folks have and what you've heard some of the criticism from some of the community newspapers in the Northland is that people feel that this is really about sort of incumbent protection. And the reason I'm asking the why is because if you listen to the testimony when the House committee was up in the current 8th Congressional District in Hermantown, you actually heard people talk about this very issue. And so when the House Redistricting Chair, Representative Anderson, said in Hermantown public hearing that this is going to be a fair process, I think everyone took her at the word on that. But I think if you look at what map was produced in the testimony, you see a very different sort of map. And so one of the – in the hearing, they really talked about how people felt that the north part of the state should not be one congressional district. I looked through the testimony, and actually earlier in the week when the House debated this, Chair Anderson talked about that folks called for this northern district. She said that people had testified in support of that. I went through and reviewed the testimony and found no such evidence at all. In fact, it was all to the contrary. 7 of the 13 testifiers commented on this topic of sort of creating a northern district, and six of them then made no mention of it at all. But none of them, all of the comments that they did talk about was about keeping the 7th and the 8th two separate congressional districts. I just want to read you one quote or a few quotes from individuals, just in case you haven't listened to the testimony from the House side. The quote here is, historically, there is a 120-year precedent of providing two separate congressional districts between Northwest Minnesota and Northeast Minnesota. They're organized based on spheres of interest and economic difference between the two areas, and that through the years, there has been a number of government and private agencies that have developed based upon those concepts. And this is a former state senator, Ron Dicklich. Another comment is from a resident. Please do not take the belted approach, combining the north part of the 7th with the north part of the 8th. That's Don By from Pequot Lakes. Another person then talked about the community of interest, particularly between the Red River Valley and its similar interests. For example, to talk in the 8th District with sugar beets and soybeans is different than taconite and seaway cargo. It's not the same language that we are familiar with. The Red River Valley is significantly different and that we are familiar with than what we are familiar with in the Northeast, and that's from Alan Netland. So you see the public testimony really is saying to the contrary, that these districts should not sort of be molded together. Yet, unfortunately, the map that you're going to be voting on today does exactly that. And so, again, go back to why. You know, there's some serious questions about sort of what is the community of interest? How does the community of interest that exists in the Red River Valley, is it similar to what exists in the 8th Congressional District? And there's no clear justification right now in the maps being produced. And so just some other concerns that I have about the map is really how I described in the previous meeting was sort of the partisan gerrymandering that I think we see go on. Common Cause worked again with Professor Michael McDonald to analyze the political bias in the districts that are being proposed before you. And I just want to walk through the results of that. Basically, he found that of the 8 congressional districts, 4 of them have a political bias towards basically Republicans, 3 have a political bias towards Democrats, and 1 would be sort of what we call swing district, basically. But just to give you some of the specific numbers, in the first, that congressional district has a political bias of 3 points towards Republicans. In the second, it has a political bias towards Republicans of 5 points. The same in the third, another 5-point Republican bias. However, in the fourth, there is a 10-point political bias towards Democrats. The fifth, which is, I believe, Minneapolis, has a 20-point political advantage, political bias score towards Democrats. The sixth has a political bias score of 10 towards Republicans. The seventh has the same 10-point political bias score towards Republicans. And the eighth has a 2 percentage point bias towards Democrats. And so with that, you see sort of these concerns about the political gerrymandering and really sort of the incumbent protection that I think that exists within the districts. And lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about a memo that was sent to you 10 years ago. And this actually came from Joe Manske, who was advising Governor Ventura at the time about the process. And he wrote a memo to future map makers about the process and sort of outlined some things to keep in mind as you develop maps. And I just wanted to highlight a few parts of this memo because I think it's really important, because it inevitably seems that this particular process is going to the courts. And so his particular part is, and I'm going to quote, "In the final analysis, the court-ordered plans strongly resemble the plans we submitted to the court. I offer the following reasons as a possible explanation. Sort of one, our plans were publicly developed using clearly articulated criteria and reflected in many instances public testimony presented at the commission meetings." I think on that particular part, unfortunately, I don't think you followed that. His second reason is that plans were politically balanced. And as I just talked about, I think the plan that you're currently going to be voting on is not politically balanced. Third, he said, "Undue attention was not paid to the residents of incumbents. I found that using population compactness and reducing political subdivision splits as the principal criteria, a large number of incumbents were paired. It takes some effort to reduce these natural pairings, and the court plan reflects the same basic methodology we used." Now, this particular point is more in reference to the legislative maps, but I think points to some of the concerns that I previously mentioned regarding your plans. And so I think, unfortunately, what this map that you currently have in front of you is, you're setting yourselves up to fail, where the governor is likely to veto this and move this whole process into the courts. And so I think it's really important to think about what can we do to fix this process down the road, but more importantly, how can we do a better job in the future? Because I think Minnesotans are tired of sort of this failed redistricting process and are looking for a process that isn't going to waste time and isn't going to waste money. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Dean, in your competitiveness analysis,
yes,
you knew this question would come. So what kind of an index are you using to come up with those numbers, the plus 5, plus 20? This is Mr. McDonald's analysis, is that right?
Correct. Mr. Chair, you had, I hope, received sort of the legislative memo that I sent, and in that memo it walks through sort of the methodology. And the methodology that he used examining the legislative districts is the same that he used examining the congressional districts now with the testimony I just gave. But what he looks at in terms of the races, he basically looks at the 2008 presidential election as sort of the scale, and then does sort of a process, again, that's been gone through the courts numerous times and sort of a widely agreed upon process in terms of evaluating political bias.
Okay, so 2008 presidential.
Yes.
Members, questions for Mr. Dean? Thank you, Mr. Dean. I also have, I don't know if I have a name, but it sounds like is there someone from the League of Women Voters? Going to join us? If you could just identify yourself for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chairman Michelle and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Knuth, and I'm Public Policy Coordinator for League of Women Voters. Our interim executive director, Laura Frederick Wang, was the one who's going to present the testimony, but she had a conflict that she couldn't get away from. So I'm in her stead, and I don't know some of the background research that she mentions as well, so I hope you'll bear with me.
Thank you.
League of Women Voters Minnesota is also a partner in Draw the Line Minnesota, which is a network of nonprofit organizations which believe that redistricting must be transparent, accessible to average citizens, and encourage accountability as to how maps are drawn. We believe that the process used here has lacked critical components of good policy making. The public has not had anywhere near an adequate amount of time to review the map and provide comments on how it impacts their communities and how they will be represented in the next decade. We ask that this committee allow more time for public review and comments prior to taking a vote, and that some of the meetings we suggest take place outside of the Capitol. For the past several months, we have spoken with people who were involved in previous redistricting cycles in Minnesota and around the country. The message came through loud and clear that after the map comes out is when citizen input is the most important. It's not until after you see a map or several maps that you realize and know what a good map looks like. As to the map here, it is the only one that we have seen, and we first saw it on Monday. was passed out of the House committee only one day later, before many people in Minnesota even knew about it, let alone had the opportunity to analyze the new boundaries, consider their impact, and prepare a statement. Because this map departs dramatically in many ways from the current districts, it has raised many questions as to why the lines were drawn as they were. League of Women Voters has local organizations in 40 communities around Minnesota, and I have heard feedback from some of the members in the those communities about the new map, especially those who live in the northern and central parts of the state. Terry Collill from the Detroit Lakes League of Women Voters expressed several concerns with the configuration of the new 7th and 8th. These include the facts that the counties that run along Minnesota's western border share a common industry of agriculture, while the eastern side of Minnesota is focused more on timber. These industries are split up under the new map. Terry knows of many family farms that would now span the two districts. The Red River Valley is split into two districts, raising concerns about how this would impact flood mitigation efforts. Also split into two districts are the chain of lakes in Becker and Otter Tail counties, which have been working together to deal with invasive aquatic species. On the eastern side, Lake Mille Lacs appears to be split. From a natural resources perspective, this could be problematic. League of Women Voters in St. Cloud also raise concerns about their community being split as it is. The plan is such a departure from what they have seen before, and they said it would be, quote, quite a shock, unquote, if it were adopted. We all know that there are going to be winners and losers in this process, and I am not coming before you today to tell you whether this map is right or wrong for Minnesota. I am instead asking that you provide the public with more time to review this map and ask questions about why these decisions were made and to get answers to those questions. We are also interested in learning about what alternatives were considered and why they were rejected. Minnesotans will need to live with this map for the next 10 years. The League of Women Voters Minnesota and Draw the Line ask that you take the time to get the process right and delay a vote until citizens have had more time to review the map. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knuth. And so, Ms. Knuth, is the organization you represent, or that coalition that you referred to, Draw the Line, have you proposed a map? Do you have a plan, either a state plan or a congressional plan? Or
we have not. I believe that the Draw the Line campaign is planning to put together a citizens commission during the summer to look at drawing maps. I'm not sure if it's drawing maps or analyzing what's happened with these maps, but to look further into it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your pinch hitting today, I guess. And I know there's a couple other people in the room. I just want to make sure, is there anyone else from the public? Or yes, I think that's Mr. Collins, if I have it right.
And members, my name is Lester Collins. I'm the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Collins.
Thank you very kindly. I'm glad you recognize me, because I kind of have some doubts about myself in the last days running from place to place. My comments will be very brief. I've testified a number of different times, primarily at the House, and my concerns pretty much echo the concerns I think that you've heard from those that have testified so far. We've met, many of us as a group, tried to meet with community members in terms of mobilizing and educating them. I was in a meeting earlier today called the African American Leadership Council, which is a group of about 70-something community organizations within St. Paul, primarily African American. And they were expressing any number of concerns and wanting to be involved. I was telling them about the hearing today. I can share with you, I know how this process works. I've been dealing with it for 24 years, but I was not so much redistricting, but just life in the legislature. and it was hard trying to pinpoint for them, this hearing, a time, and when you 15 minutes following session for everyday working folk or people that are concerned. I do know that among the concerns that I heard were related to some split as it relates to, I think, the Selby, Dell, Rondo, area. I couldn't really speak to that at the time because I was running in from another hearing. I haven't had time to really look or examine the maps as closely as I would like to. I've heard a number of comments about them. I can tell you that my concern continues to be the kind of opportunity that the community needs in terms of understanding and being able to make comment as relates to the drawing of the maps. Again, I'll try not to reiterate what you've already heard in terms of time frames, but my appeal, again, is that you postpone the vote in order to allow many of the principals, I think, that you have spoken to and those that are in most redistricting documentation in terms of an equitable process. I think that your intent is very much to have that. I would just encourage you to make sure that that is the case. It does not feel that way from my perspective at this particular point, so I would encourage that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Collins. And while you're here, I just want to make sure we address at least one of the things you, one of the specifics you brought up. I just want to assure you that you can have all this information, but there's no, there would be no split. You talked about the Selby, Dale, Rondo.
Yeah, and I'm, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. There may be those that have looked closer at them that could speak to that. That only speaks to part of my concern, is not being able to be more factual in terms of what I just shared with you, but I would suggest, at least if I could, that if there's anyone behind me that could speak to perhaps the concern, at least as I heard it, and I just heard it in the meeting that I was in earlier, it only speaks to my concern for not being able to answer more knowledgeably, given the time frame, to be able to answer that question. So. Does that make any sense, anybody? Was it the fraud? Something, I think it was the legislative
and
map.
And Mr. Okay. Collins, that might have been the legislative
okay.
map.
No problem.
And we can share that information with you and those maps as well.
I would appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Thanks for joining us. Any additional, any other folks want to join us? Any public testimony? Okay. Members, let's if I could, let's get this into procedural shape. Mr. Bodern, we have
Mr. Chairman, in the packets you have the A1 delete everything amendment. I believe that's the author's amendment, so you'll need to begin by adopting that to put the bill in its proper shape. There's also a copy of Senate File 1246 as it was introduced.
All right, members. So we're going to take the language in the A1, make it a part of Senate File 1246, which again is the same plan that is in your packet and was made public on Monday. So I will move the A1. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. All right. So the A1 has been adopted. Members, further discussion on Senate File 1246. Some more that we need to do. If I could just respond and maybe get Senator Bach a little bit on some of the map details, but I think it is worth noting we have a couple of new east-west districts, and from some of the testimony. I really think if someone was to ask why, I really think it starts with, and in often cases ends with, the absolute requirement that we have exactly equal population districts. And given the population shifts, particularly in western Minnesota and particularly in northern Minnesota, we have fewer bodies in those places. And so we've got a couple districts that have had to grow. And you also see that in the central cities. So I know there's been some focus on the 8th district, and that's understandable. You know, what holds that part of the map together, keeps the northern tribes together? Obviously, there's a common international border with Canada. You add in Lake of the Woods, the tourism and resorts around that area. That actually fits pretty well with at least the eastern side of what would be the new 8th. The 7th district, I think, could be argued becomes a real ag-focused with a little bit of exurbs. The 6th had to drop population. The 4th and 5th had to grow out a little bit because of the shifting populations. And then down on the south side, the 1st, that had to gain. So that comes a little north and, again, takes in some of the counties on the western edge of the state. So I thought that's worth at least a few comments, members. Any other discussion? Senator Harrington.
I'm just curious about the configuration of the 6th district. If someone could explain. It seems like that's... It's a rather odd shape and sort of circles around, and in some regards, I'm just looking at the minority opportunity districts, and with the 4th district having 24.2% total minority out of the voting population, it just seems odd that you cut off the eastern side of that part of the district, and I'm just wondering if there was an explanation to that.
Well, I've described the new 6th, Senator Harrington. That's now more compact and suburban, and that the 6th district was the biggest. That needed to shed nearly 100,000 voters. Huge growth in, Senator Koch would be familiar, huge growth in Sherburne and Wright counties. So the new 6th is now easily connected, I-94, Highway 10. And so now it does shift back to the east a little bit to reflect some population growth in those northern suburbs.
This seems like Washington has as much in common with Dakota and that area as it does with Anoka or with in that regard.
Senator Koch?
Well, Mr. Chair, and it could be, but the district is actually, you know, looks somewhat similar, and I think it's kind of reflective of that exurban, suburban exurban flavor. I don't know how else you want to say it, but certainly Elk River and Buffalo and Stillwater. I mean, there's that suburban exurban feel to that area, but it's largely reflective of, we did have tremendous population growth there and had to lose, sort of lost that western side.
Senator Rest, you had your hand up.
Yep. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I share once again concerns about the process that we have been dealing with here, and echoed by the testifiers. And I would like to know also why it was not the contours of the current districts, which did reflect pretty significant communities of interest, why they were abandoned rather than and the new districts drawn. And then further, as I also said publicly, the map looks to me to be an incumbent protection bill. And I know a lot of attention to the 7th and 8th, but it seems to me that the only incumbent that's not protected is in the 1st Congressional District. And so I have more strong objections to the process again, but just curious about the why contours of the current districts could have been followed more closely. And obviously reflected in some of the testimony that the House heard, but that we were not privy to.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll be a satisfactory answer for you, Senator Ross, but you gotta grab the exact same number of bodies. And we've had a real shift. And so one of the testifiers talked about how we've had that northern split for over 100 years. Well, I'm sure that's historically accurate, but the state and its population has really changed in that 100 years. And we have to reflect that, and we have to reflect that to the person. We don't even have a little deviation. As you know, we can deviate up 1% on the state plan, but law and the courts will not let us deviate by more than 1. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, well aware of the deviation that's permitted, and actually, and I think the courts have said 2% is allowable, even though your plan is 1% for the legislative districts. But the I think that I'm still interested in why, even with some shifts in population, the contours of the current congressional districts were not considered in the drawing of this map. That's all.
Well,
I think it's an objection that you probably anticipate.
Senator Box.
Senator Michelle, I just have to say on the record that what you have done in the 8th is outrageous. The population deviation in the 8th. The 8th Congressional District needed to pick up its deviation. It was short 2,649 people. And to now draw a district that is probably half new constituents for that incumbent congressman, the word just comes to mind is outrageous. And I don't buy the argument that that kind of radical change had to be made in order to meet with the preciseness of the districts all being the same size. 6 had to shed 100,000 people. You could have easily put 2,649 of those people from 6 into 8. It's a contiguous district. I just think it's not a very good piece of work. Better work could have been done.
Well, Senator Bach, do you have an amendment or a plan?
Not today, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach, if you have an amendment or plan that's in the works, it sounds like you should expose that for public comment pretty soon.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
The governor has indicated that in order for him to support a plan, it will have to have wide bipartisan support, and we would be looking for you to come up with another plan that could get our support. It's not up to us to do that.
Well, Senator Ross, I was hoping you would come up with a plan.
It's up to you to do that. You have not produced a map or a plan that will have any bipartisan support.
Senator Ross, were you lacking any machinery or staff or budget to come up with a plan?
Mr. Chairman, it's your job to come up with a plan that we can support. We
plan
do not
is
support
before you
this
today,
one.
Senator.
And we do not support it. Come up with something better.
Well, Senator Michelle, I mean, it's pretty clear to me that the House of Representatives is driving the train. They adopted principles. They adopted a map. The Senate hasn't even adopted principles to draw a map yet. They released their legislative map before this committee even adopted one, and interestingly enough, ours turned out to be exactly the same as the one that they released and voted on. So the Senate has done, publicly at least, no work on this redistricting plan. It has, in its entirety, from a public perspective, been drawn by the State House of Representatives. That's a little disappointing.
And Senator Bach, you know, the districting principles are embedded within this legislation as well as the state plan that we pass. So this will
this moves forward, that'll be on the floor as well. Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman, to that point on the principles, if I could just ask a question. I know these are, a reprint of the principles. It looks like identical that were previously passed. For example, subdivision 2, the nesting, doesn't really apply to a congressional plan. Does that not matter? Are these just the overarching principles that apply to both plans? Or is the nesting not need to be there? Or I'm just curious about that.
Senator Gerlach?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerlach, I would call your attention to subdivision 1, the applicability and the principles. And they are intended to apply to both legislative and congressional districts. So if they were enacted in this form, they would apply to both plans.
Okay.
They are identical to the principles that were included in the legislative plan.
Okay.
Then Senator Gerlach moves Senate File 1246 as amended. Be recommended to pass. And sent to the full rules committee. And Senator Rest requests a roll call. Further discussion. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Michelle.
Yes.
Senator Bach.
No.
Senator Gerlach.
Yes.
Senator Harrington.
No.
Senator Koch.
Yes.
Senator Nenow. Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Senjum.
Yes.
Thank you. Members are being 4-aye and 3-nay. The motion is approved. And so Senate File 1246 is recommended to pass off to Rules Committee. Thank you for your participation this afternoon, members. Committee adjourned.